The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards with another edition of the Armchair Traveler from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And over the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Washington Post and the National Geographic Traveler magazine. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that may be featured in the articles we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. On today's Armchair Traveler, we go on the trail of Frank Lloyd Wright in Illinois and Wisconsin. Now, I first heard of Frank Lloyd Wright from my father, who admired Wright's architectural prowess and design talent. My dad was a landscape architect who shared Wright's passion for wanting to protect or enhance the places where he located his renowned houses and buildings. Well, our tour today comes from Andrea Sachs' travelogue that was published in the September 5th, 2019 issue of the Washington Post. So let us begin. Frank Lloyd Wright died 60 years ago in April 1959, yet he still feels present, as if his ghost were consulting architects from the afterlife. The open floor plan concept, use of steel and concrete in non-utilitarian buildings, and walls of windows that pull nature close are ubiquitous design elements today. "You're welcome," says Wright from the grave. In July, UNESCO recognized his contribution to modern architecture by adding 8 of his buildings to its list of World Heritage Sites. Half are in the Midwest, for obvious reasons. The architect spent most of his 70-year career in the Chicago area and Wisconsin, his birthplace. He died in Arizona, where he wintered. The Prairie State boasts the highest number of his structures, followed by the Badger State. Combined, the pair claim about 25 sites that are open to the public. Dozens more remain in private hands but can be viewed from the sidewalk or during special open house events, such as the Wright Plus House Walk in Oak Park, Illinois, which the Frank Lloyd Wright Trust holds in May. The Shepherd Travelers on their pilgrimages, the Illinois and Wisconsin tourism offices unveiled self-guided tours to connect the Wright dots. In Wisconsin, hit all 9 and earn a collectible mug. However, between the tours, gift shops, and driving distances, you will need significant vacation time to visit all 22 attractions. For an abbreviated road trip, I reached out to John H. Waters at the Frank Lloyd Wright Building Conservancy in Chicago. The preservation program's manager and architect helped me craft an itinerary that followed Wright's professional arc from his earliest projects, a windmill for his aunts, and to his latest, his home in Taliesin, from Prairie style to Usonian. His architecture is endlessly fascinating, Waters told me, before I set off on my journey. You keep on learning more about his work the more you delve into it. To be sure, after a dozen Wright creations over 6 days, I could spot a low-pitched roof and cantilevered ledge from a street away. Now, the first stop that Andrea Sachs begins her abbreviated road trip with is the Frederick C. Roby House, and this was built in 1910 in Chicago's Hyde Park. Why it's important? The private residence is Wright's last grand prairie-style house. In the late 1940s, the home was almost demolished. Wright, who often quipped that his favorite building was his next one, traveled to Chicago from his home in Wisconsin to rally for the Roby cause. Now, here's a tour overview. During the 50-minute tour, guests explore the ground level, which includes the foyer, grown-up playroom and billiard room, second-story living and dining vessel with its 24 leaded glass casement doors, and hand-loomed rugs with geometric patterns, and the upstairs bedrooms, which display several original chairs. Take note of the hook in Laura Roby's closet. The house's construction predates the use of hangers, which Meyer May, a Michigan department store founder and Wright client, popularized. See if you can spot the 3 types of light fixtures containing Wright's logo of a square inscribed with a circle and a cross. Here's a fascinating fact. According to legend, when the Chicago Theological Seminary turned the residence into a dorm for couples, graduating students absconded with the wall sconces. Only 1 of the original 35 remains in the house. Hey, alums, if you're reading this, please return the sconces to their rightful place, pun intended. Gift shop find, canvas tote bag with the same diamond-shaped design as the light screens in the living room. And an extra attraction for you, stroll over to the Heller House, which is also in Hyde Park, and dream big. 16-room mansion built in 1897, on the market now for a cool $2.2 million. And by the way, the tours for this section is $20, held from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Thursday through Monday. For more information about the Ruby House, just check it out at cal.flwright.org/tours/Roby Next is the Emil Bock House, built in 1915 in Chicago's Rogers Park. Now, why is it important? Well, the brick house represents Wright in transition between his Prairie and Usonian periods. It is also the only Wright residence in Chicago you can rent for the night. Now, here's a tour overview. You can spend the hour poking around the house commissioned by Emil Bock, whose brother owned Wright's Stephens House a few blocks away. Sibling rivalry, perchance, in parentheses. Though the furnishings are not original, the building pieces were created from Wright's designs. Here's a fascinating fact. When subsequent owners ripped out the plaster to put in wallboard, a teenage neighbor asked if he could take a chunk of the material. Fast forward to 2012. Gunny Harbo was restoring the house and seeking the original paint color. The neighbor produced the answer, sunshine yellow. That kid, by the way, was Tim Samuelson, who grew up to become Chicago's official cultural historian. Now, we have a gift shop find. No gift shop at the moment, but you can grab a free postcard of the Bock House from a stack in the living room. So when you go through the living room, grab a card. And here's the extra attraction. Travel about 10 miles south to the Rookery Building, which Burnham and Root designed in 1888. Now, in 1905, Wright was hired to modernize the Victorian lobby. The Frank Lloyd Wright Trust runs a store on the ground floor. You can pick up champagne flutes and a scarf-slash-tie clip adorned with the lobby's rosette detail, or buy a set of Bock wine glasses to toast your Wright sleepover. And more information about the tours, they are available Tuesday and Wednesday, May through September. Cost you $12. The rental cost is $480 a night. More details for you at emilbockhouse.com. E-M-I-L-B-A-C-H, emilbockhouse.com. Next stop is the Frank Lloyd Wright home, the one built in 1889, and his studio, which was built in 1898. This is in Oak Park, Illinois, so this might be an interesting stop for those of you who are really into architecture. And why it's important? Well, the Frank Lloyd Wright Trust, which owns and operates the home and studio, describes the site as the birthplace of Wright's vision for a new American architecture. In addition to designing his residence, he worked on more than 150 projects in this studio, including the Ruby House and Unity Temple, both UNESCO sites. Here's the tour overview. Over 60 minutes, interpreters, the trust name for guides, lead guests through the shingle-style home he shared with his wife and their six children, plus the studio he built after parting ways with his employer, Adler and Sullivan. You can see early signs of his signature style, such as the large windows that create the sensation of sitting in a treehouse, the room within a room, and the pathway to discovery. The maze-like route to the front door, in other words. This was his laboratory, said Melissa Elsmo, an interpreter. You are truly in the motherland of Frank Lloyd Wright. Now, here's a fascinating fact. In the playroom, Wright built the piano into the wall by removing a leg and securing the instrument with an iron strap hook. You can glimpse his mad genius setup from the stairs. Don't hit your head on the piano, warned Melissa as the group descended. And then we have gift shop finds. Silk ties decorated with the lotus pattern from the dining room, windows, and dog leashes and collars showcasing the skylight design from his studio. And an extra attraction, take a self-guided walking tour of Oak Park, which claims the world's largest collection of Wright buildings. Among the highlights, Unity Temple, his concrete masterpiece from 1905 to 1908, the bootleg houses, which he built clandestinely while still employed by Adler and Sullivan, the Frank Thomas House, one of his first prairie-style homes, and the Laura Gale House, a precursor to Falling Water in Pennsylvania. Now, the tours are daily, and they cost $18, and you can learn more about these tours at cal.flwright.org/tours, home and studio. One more time, cal.flwright.org/tours/home and studio. Next up is the Leroux House, 1952, and that is the French style, L-A-U-R-E-N-T, if you're looking for it in spelling, in Leroux. And anyway, it's in Rockford, Illinois, and why it's important, it is the only home Wright built for a client with a disability. Tour overview. For an hour, docents escort guests through the one-story Usonian hemicycle home, even peering into the kitchen cabinets to admire the dinnerware Wright created for the Imperial Hotel in Japan. Wright adapted the house and furniture to fit Kenneth Leroux's needs, down to the height of the doorknobs and the light switches. The owner, who had a spinal tumor and became paraplegic, said the house helps me focus on my capabilities, not my disabilities. That is the gift Wright gave to me. Depending on the guide, you might march up the street to see how the structure is hidden from the road, obscured by nature. Here's a fascinating fact. Wright installed 3 Taliesin tree lamps at different angles, 90, 180, and 270 degrees. The architect urged his clients to keep the walls unadorned, so when the Leroux's daughters wanted to hang a poster of David Cassidy in her bedroom, she had to stick to the dreamboat. I rather had to stick the dreamboat inside the door of a storage unit. Sounds like my wife sometimes. Anyway, gift shop find. The Leroux House Foundation is building a visitor center with a gift shop and parking lot across the street. Open until it opens next year. Head to the Midway Village and Museum Center for a 3D bookmark that displays the front and back of the house. Difficult image to capture without a panoramic lens. Then we have an extra attraction. Visit the Pettit Chapel in the adjacent town of Belvedere. Emma Glasner Pettit hired Wright in 1906 to design a memorial for her husband, William Pettit. The chapel is the only building he created for a cemetery setting. You can grab a map online at the front office, or at the front office, I should say. And by the way, the tours are held Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from April through December. They cost $20. And you can learn more at the LeroyHouse.com, L-A-U-R-E-N-T, LeroyHouse.com. So that sounds like a fascinating place to visit. Now, here's a familiar name if you buy cleaning products, and it's a great place to check out, too. It's S.C. Johnson, his house built in 1939 and again updated in 1950 in Racine, Wisconsin. Why it's important? It's the only corporate headquarters designed by Wright that is still in use today. The tour overview. S.C. Johnson, which manufactures cleaning supplies and other household products, is an active workplace, so guides keep guests on a tight lanyard during the 90-minute outing. The tour stops at 2 Wright structures, the research tower, which is dormant, and the administration building, which is still in operation, plus the Foster Partners design Fortaleza Hall. The community center contains the Lily Pad gift shop and exhibits on Wright and 5 generations of Johnson family leaders. You have only 15 minutes, so shop and read fast. On weekends, visitors are allowed upstairs to the mezzanine and penthouse levels of the administrative building. You can take a meeting in the 1940s penthouse office of H.F. Johnson, Jr., the 3rd generation to run the company. Here's a fascinating fact. Wright designed 3-legged desk chairs, assuming employees would sit with their feet flat on the floor. Now, you got to picture this. However, many women would cross their legs, causing their chairs to tip over. When Johnson Jr. asked Wright to add a 4th leg, he refused and suggested Johnson's staff learn to sit properly. Well, during a meeting, the company president asked Wright to pick up a pencil on the floor. The architect toppled over. Johnson received his 4th chair leg. Well, here's a gift shop find. Johnson product loyalists can take home a plush toy of a scrubbing bubble or a Raid mosquito. And by the way, you probably recognize those brand names. They're S.C. Johnson products, Scrubbing Bubble and Raid. Anyway, for a Wright-themed object, defy the no art on the walls order for a decorative wood hanging styled after the circular pattern on the glass dome in the administration building. Some extra attractions. Attend a screening of Carnaba, a son's memoir, a documentary about Sam Johnson's expeditions from Racine to Fortaleza, Brazil, the same trip his father took in 1935, or the Academy Award-winning documentary To Be Alive, which the company presented at the 1964 World's Fair in New York and this was part of the big scheme there. And then they also had the Tour Wingspread, the prairie-style home right built for Johnson Jr. It's now a conference center, but offers tours when the building is unoccupied. And for more information, they have free tours available Wednesday to Sunday, May through September, and Thursday to Sunday, October through April. Again, this is in Racine, Wisconsin. Check it all out at scjohnson.com/visit. S and C and then johnson.com/visit. So there you go. Then we head out to the Burnham Block, built in 1916, and this is in Milwaukee. And why is this important? Well, the row of houses demonstrates Wright's first attempt at building affordable housing. Owners could pick among 30 or 40 standardized models, ranging from 805 square feet to 5 bedrooms with maid's quarters. Here's the tour overview. 6 of the 20 American system-built homes reside on this city block, once surrounded by celery fields. Over 45 minutes, docents take visitors inside Model B1, which measures 805 square feet, think tiny house, and 2 flat Model C, which is under renovation. On the tour, learn how Wright employed such money and space-saving strategies as using less expensive gum wood and installing 33 windows to create the illusion of roominess. Several pieces, including the fireplace grill, cabinetry, shelving, windows, sink, and bathtub, are original. Here's a fascinating fact. Wright considered gutters offensive, so he hid pipes inside the house to drain the roof. You can also see pipes jutting out from the flower planters and sleeping porch. Here's a gift shop find. Leather journal in Cherokee red, his signature color, with a Burnham Block logo designed by a docent. And then we have an extra attraction. Spend the night in an American system-built home on West Burnham Street. VRBO lists the rental for about $210 a night. And tour dates vary by season and cost $15. You can get more information at WrightInMilwaukee.com. WrightInMilwaukee.com. Our next stop is the Unitarian Meeting House, built in 1951. This is in Madison, Wisconsin. And why is this important? Wright, a Unitarian, was a member of the Madison congregation that his parents helped to establish in 1879. This was his church, said John Powell, a guide and church member. This building is a statement to his religion. He called it his little country church. Tour overview, the hour-long tour of the Usonian building starts in the addition, which the congregation built in 2008 to accommodate its more than 1,400 members who could not fit inside Wright's 200-seat building. At the meeting house, which is tricked out in scaffolding, guests learn about its structural follies, including a leaking copper roof and sagging trusses. Inside, a hexagonal dome is inscribed with the names of 6 men Wright admired, including Thoreau, Emerson, and his uncle, a Unitarian preacher. The auditorium resembles a ship's prow, and its sides echo the cliff's walls of the quarry, where congregants collected 1,000 tons of dolomite. The tour wraps up in the Gabler living room by the bell that the church had to remove because it swayed dangerously in the wind. Here's a fascinating fact. In the auditorium, an etching of a proverb about coins, bread, and flowers is attributed to an ancient parable. But Google the phrase, and you won't find an exact match. Powell said Wright possibly quoted the same without fact-checking himself. His version's now committed to stone. Well, here's a gift shop find, a DVD that includes the standing-room-only sermon Wright delivered in 1955, plus other interviews and footage about the construction of the church. Here's some extra attractions. Check out from the sidewalk the Jacobs One House, the first Usonian structure and a UNESCO site. Enjoy a snack at the rooftop cafe of the Monona Terrace, which Wright designed in 1938 but never lived to see completed. The Community and Convention Center also has impressive gift shop with shelves of Wright items. My pick, Wisconsin-made ceramic bowls and mugs with a drawing of the Madison skyline and Monona Terrace. Here's some more info. Tours are held weekdays, May through September, and Sunday year-round. Cost is $12.50 if you buy the ticket online. If you do it at the door, it's going to cost you $15. And it's free on Sundays after morning services. So if you'd like to check it out, attend a Unitarian meeting at the Unitarian Meeting House online. It's unitarianmeetinghouse.org. And here's Taliesin. And there's a couple of ways to pronounce that word I discovered. You can say Taliesin or Taliesin. And I kind of like the Essen, the way it reads here. It's spelled T-A-L-I-E-S-I-N. Built between 1911 and 1959. A lot of work in progress with this one. This is in Spring Green, Wisconsin. And it's important. Why? Well, the UNESCO site contains Wright's home, studio, and school, which continues to train architectural students today. The multiple structures on the 800-acre estate span his entire career from the 1890s to the 1950s, so you can see why the work in progress is appropriate. Here's a tour overview. Choose from several tours that last from 1 to 4 hours and emphasize different parts of the property. The two-hour highlights tour, for instance, offers a comprehensive look at his personal and professional life. Guests visit the two main structures, the Hillside Studio and Theater, and his home, plus a replica of his earliest work, Taliesin, the Romeo and Juliet windmill from 1897. His first two jobs came from his aunts, who ran a school here. Now, the pair sold the property to their nephew for a dollar. Yep, that's right, $1. Visitors can peer into the students' workroom and check out the dining hall with its light fixtures made of plywood scraps. Wright rebuilt his private building quarters twice, the first time after the 1914 massacre of his mistress, her two children, and four workmen. That's right, they were all murdered. And the second time after an electrical fire. Our guide, Peggy, lowered and softened her voice when recounting Wright's tragedy. A few tour-goers unfamiliar with the story gasped. He tinkered with the design until the end of his life. Now, here's a fascinating fact. In the guest room, Wright positioned a small window near a statue so that during the equinox, a shard of light would illuminate the angel. Now, here's a gift shop find, silver jewelry by Spring Green artist Allie Krause, who created the pieces exclusively for Taliesin. Her Wright-inspired creations would include, include, window silhouette earrings, a window quartet necklace, and a double-petal flower earring. Now, extra attraction, dine at the Riverview Terrace Cafe, Wright's only restaurant design still in operation. The food artisan immersion program, which teaches budding chefs a holistic approach to cooking, runs the lunch spot inside the Frank Lloyd Wright Visitor Center. The seasonal dishes change often, but you can always find cheese on the menu. Why not? It's Wisconsin, right? Various daily tours start at $22, and TaliesinPreservation.org has more information for you online. T-A-L-I-E-S-I-N, TaliesinPreservation.org. So there you go. And by the way, Andrea Sachs has written a ton of articles for the Washington Post travel section since 2000, and we've had several of her articles on, and she has reported from nearby places such as Ellicott City, Maryland, the Jersey Shore, and far-flung locations like Burma, Namibia, and Russia. So quite a treat there to hear from Andrea again as she gives us a tour on the trail of Frank Lloyd Wright in Illinois and Wisconsin. Well, next we go on a road trip to tour Jefferson's, Virginia from the October-November 2019 issue of National Geographic Traveler. Writer Susan O'Keefe leads us on an 88-mile tour. And now she undertook this, she says, in 3 days, and her stops included Charlottesville New Dominion Indie Bookshop and Carter Mountain Orchard, which is off Virginia's Route 53. Here's her introduction. Before becoming America's third president, Thomas Jefferson was in many ways its premier traveler. As ambassador to France, he developed a passion for fine wines. Jefferson returned to the U.S. with vine cuttings that he planted at his Monticello estate in Virginia. Now, a quick word here. You can pronounce it Monticello, which is Italian for little mountain, or you can pronounce it Monticello, which is American. I will stay with the Italian version. While his enological experiments weren't very successful, he did create a thirst for the grape in his homeland. Road trippers can visit Jefferson's estate and the university he founded, University of Virginia, but they shouldn't stop there. The central Virginia Piedmont, a few hours southwest of Washington, D.C., is a region of rolling foothills, ablaze with color in the fall, winding roads that lead to now thriving vineyards and small towns with big charms plus tasty pies. Here's an itinerary that would make the founding father proud. Okay, let's see what kind of itinerary she has. Well, first up, is a place called Sunrise Surprise. It's for spectacular views of the Blue Ridge Mountains. You can head to Humpback Rocks, a massive greenstone outcrop at milepost 5.8 on the Blue Ridge Parkway. Start your early morning hike from Mountain Farm Trail, where a living history museum gives a glimpse of Appalachian life in the late 1800s. And I will say many of these exhibits I'm going to describe are really worth the time, so take your time. It's a great place to visit, and you can always go back and pick up some more things. It's just a lot of fun, no questions asked. Well, stop number two is called It's Academic. Now, It's Academic, Thomas Jefferson's vision for an academical village, comes into focus in Charlottesville on the lush University of Virginia grounds, where faculty and students have lived alongside each other in columned pavilions since classes commenced in 1825. At the heart of the university rises the Rotunda, a UNESCO World Heritage Site modeled after the Pantheon in Rome and built to house Jefferson's vast book collection. Adding to the grandeur of the grounds are Jefferson's serpentine walled gardens tucked behind each of the 10 pavilions. Take a stroll over to downtown's pedestrian mall, 8 tree-lined blocks featuring stores such as the Pie Chest, the impeccable Pig Clothing Boutique, and Timberlake's Pharmacy with its original soda fountain. So just a lot to do right there if you just want a tour of the University of Virginia grounds, huh? Well, then we have the House on the Hill, a self-taught architect and master gardener. Jefferson designed nearly every aspect of Monticello, the mountaintop estate and working plantation where he lived until his death in 1826. Set high above Charlottesville, the mostly intact house brims with Indian artifacts, leather-bound books, world maps, and innovations that saved Jefferson precious time. A walk along Mulberry Row, the main avenue of operations for the 5,000-acre plantation, highlights his dependence on the labor of enslaved people. Don't miss the exhibit dedicated to Sally Hemings, mother of 6 of Jefferson's children, which relates to poignant stories told by her son, Madison, and other family members. And while you're touring the inside of Jefferson's home, I would highly recommend his bedroom, where he has a lot of his inventions displayed there. And one of them is a way where he could handwrite a document and at the same time make a copy. That's a unique device. You've got to see that. Now, the next stop is Country Comfort. Old meets new at the Clifton Inn, built in 1799 for Thomas Mann Randolph and his wife Martha, a daughter of Jefferson's. Both antiques and abstract art grace the guest rooms of the 100-acre estate, which has a restaurant serving local duck, lamb, and vegetables. Then we have a tipple or two. Historic Route 231 winds through miles of quiet hamlets and horse farms. You can pull off a Castle Hill cider, an 18th-century plantation that ferments its drinks from heirloom apples. You can try the popular Levity cider with hints of black cherry, lemon zest, and caramel. Now, Main Street, USA. In 1840, Gordonsville welcomed the first rail cars to Central Virginia, transforming the town into a major trading hub. During the Civil War, the same trains delivered wounded soldiers to the Exchange Hotel, a railroad boarding house turned receiving hospital. Today, the Exchange Hotel and Civil War Medical Museum displays original surgical tools and prosthetic devices, plus accounts of the doctors who, by the war's end, had treated some 70,000 men here. Continue south on Main Street to pick up pillows and fine linens at Laurie Holiday Interiors, or dream about decorating your own Virginia country estate with 19th-century furnishings at Annette Lavelle Antiques. And then the wine is fine at our next stop. Jefferson imagined that the wine from his native state would equal the European varietals he coveted. Though the vineyards he planted at Monticello never quite took, he'd be delighted to know that today Virginia has more than 300 wineries, and Barboursville Vineyards is one of the region's earliest and a member of the Monticello Wine Trail, so you can check it off when you take the trail. Well, that brings us to the end of today's episode of Armchair Traveler. We certainly hope you've enjoyed it, that you'll be listening next time. I'm Mike Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, the content of our program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions may be directed to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.